Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, rights group investigate freedom of press violations at Cal Poly Humboldt. Second annual Trevor Early Memorial Foundation fundraiser a success. And hundreds of thousands of California children dropped off Medi-Cal since last year. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The anti-war protest on the Cal Poly Humboldt campus garnered national attention, not only from media outlets, but civil liberty groups who believe that rights were violated, specifically members of the media who were obstructed from documenting key moments of the protest. Some were even detained and one arrested. Here is a clip from freelance journalist Aaron Green, whose social media account, American Interviews, receives thousands of views.
It's free and fair press. There's other press agents in there. There's free and fair press. I'm allowed to cover this event.
Back that way, please.
I'm allowed to cover this event. There's press in there. Why am I not allowed in? I see other agents of press in there. Why am I not allowed in? Shutting down my First Amendment, right? Okay, I'd like to cover the event, please. All right?
You can go that way.
All right, I'm going to go around.
You're not passing here.
There's other agents of the press. There's other agents of the press in there. Why am I not allowed in?
KMA News was also on scene, and we were prevented from documenting the protesters being arrested, as we were threatened with the same fate. Here is a clip of KMA's Kelly Lincoln, narrowly avoiding detainment.
Kelly, you were back there really quick. Can you just explain what happened back there as they moved the press out from the main part of the quad?
Yeah, Kelly, they started bossing us around. I mean, they kept saying there wasn't a legal press. There was no such thing as legal press. There's no such thing as legal press. And it kind of pissed me off. I almost got arrested at that point. I was like, what?
While we were metaphorically pushed out of the protest, one of our colleagues who asked to remain anonymous was physically pushed out, assaulted by law enforcement, and sustained injuries. And KRCR ABC News Channel 7 reporter Adelmi Ruiz was arrested. Here is the audio from her video's live stream.
Hey, come here.
Me? Yes.
Come this way. Come this way.
We need to get out of the way.
Okay.
So we got a flex.
Put her in flex cuffs.
Put her in flex. Give me a flex. Give me a flex.
What's a flex?
Put your phone in your pocket. Put your phone in your pocket. Then put your hand behind your back.
Wait, I'm pressed.
Put your hand behind your back.
All right, well, you didn't. Hey, do we have an arresting seat?
Wait, I'm pressed.
Stay back there.
Wait, can I at least touch my boss?
You got an opportunity to leave.
My boss literally has me here all night.
Okay, you had an opportunity to leave. You were told multiple times to leave, otherwise you're going to be arrested.
But I can't.
You
my
can't?
Job. My job has me here all
okay,
night.
Okay, well, find a different job. Yeah. Find a different job if it causes you to break the law.
Although she appeared in the Humboldt County Jail booking log, she would be released that night. Notably, these instances are not isolated to the Cal Poly Humboldt campus. Following our live video coverage on Instagram, where we documented the detainment of local journalists, we were contacted by an organization that defends the rights of the media.
My name is Adam Rose. I'm the press rights chair for the Los Angeles Press Club. We're a nonprofit organization which journalists sign up to as members from all sorts of newsrooms, mostly around Southern California. So as you might have guessed from the name, but we share the same laws as everyone in Humboldt and all over the great state. And so part of my role with our organization is to research the ways that police and press interact with each other during major news events.
Rose stated that he began looking into the parallels of police-press interactions on college campuses, as journalists are covering these momentous protests. We asked what are in his current findings.
My initial impressions are that there have been mistakes made by law enforcement in dealing with the press. And we might say, well, you know, law enforcement has a hard job, and indeed they do. But that is not an excuse to violate state laws and to violate the Constitution. So it's important that we figure out what's happened at these and start to share these examples, not only with each other, but with law enforcement, get them to correct the policies that they may have if they've got problematic policies. And most commonly, as I've noticed, get the right training out to the officers in the field.
The United States Constitution provides the right to the freedom of press. However, in California, a newer Senate bill specifically allows journalists to be present at marches, protests, and rallies, even if dispersal orders have been given.
Coincidentally, the state senator who represents Humboldt, Senator Mike McGuire, was the author of that bill. And so it created Penal Code 409.7 for those who are into the wonky aspects of this. And so you can look it up. It's very clear that journalists are allowed to cover these sorts of events when police declare an unlawful assembly. So from Cal Poly Humboldt all the way down to UCLA, I have been tracking incidents over the last couple of weeks here where police have obstructed journalists and even arrested journalists who were just trying to do their job. So that's a very serious thing.
SB 98 also states that law enforcement shall not intentionally assault, interfere, or obstruct authorized representatives of any news service who is gathering or processing information for communication to the public. And while Rose is busy documenting freedom of press violations across the state, what unfolded at Cal Poly Humboldt caught his attention.
What really stood out to me was the language used that was recorded by a TV reporter who was covering the protests at Cal Poly Humboldt. And she said something that is so commonly a refrain among journalists that I speak to. She was just trying to do her job. And her job is vital. It's to inform the public about these actions that are happening, the protests and their point of views, counter-protesters, and how police and administration address these situations. What really just sickened me was how an officer or deputy said to her to get another job. And that shows a disregard for the law, the Constitution, and it's a disgrace to that officer's badge. The department should be furious at that officer. It is an absolute embarrassment that they were not there to uphold the law, but to violate it. And so I have very, very strong criticism for that. It is never okay to treat someone like that who is not only doing a job that is part of their constitutional rights, but it's their responsibility. And our communities depend on that information. So, you know, unless this reporter, which I have no reason to think that she was, but unless she was pushing police officers over, standing in their way, it was so unprofessional what that officer said. And to me is one of the most galling things that I've heard about in terms of the police attitude towards, you know, the people they're supposed to help protect as well.
As we previously mentioned, one journalist was arrested, others were detained, and all were obstructed from doing their job. The LA Press Club is the sole organization in Southern California representing journalists across newspapers, magazines, radio, television, and the internet. Rose explained that they utilize the data collected to educate lawmakers, elected officials, and law enforcement leaders in order to support, promote, and defend quality journalism.
I think there needs to be an understanding of, you know, what it really is like out there. Often it's abstract. And so, you know, I'll hear these things often from law enforcement. For example, they will say, people were pretending to be pressed to get behind our lines. And I have said, at this point, I've lost count, but it's many dozens of times to many different agencies. Okay, give me evidence. It's your job as police to collect evidence. You are, you know, in charge of thousands collectively, all these departments, you know, tens of thousands of officers with body cams that are supposed to be on during these times. And invariably, they don't give me any answer because they don't have any answer. So they will make up these threats to them about, oh, well, people are pretending to be press. And I've literally had PIOs, public information officers, say to me, well, what if we let a child molester behind our police lines? I mean, it's the most absurd stuff that never actually happens in real life. Meanwhile, I can point people to lists of these files, these video files, these photos showing journalists who've been assaulted by police so hard the fillings got knocked out of their teeth. Hands have been broken. People have been hit in the face with these so-called less lethal munitions. Not in California, but an example I often point to is a journalist who lost one of her eyes from one of these munitions that law enforcement use. Over and over, we see, you know, it's not just independent and freelancers or people they can't tell our press. We're talking about people from large outlets. One agency I know has attacked no less than 3 Pulitzer Prize-winning photographers over the course of the last few years. And I think it's you know, important that we understand through the evidence what is actually happening in the field. And so the point of all of that research and all of the data that I collect is to help people understand what's really happened. And I'll tell you, it's the exact same thing that journalists do. All I'm doing in this role is reporting. I'm telling people, this is the evidence that we were able to found to find. This is how we verified it. And, you know, let the public officials make determinations about the right way to corral and limit the dangers that can come from officers who are sent into the field unprepared to do a very dangerous and very difficult job. And I hope that the outcome of this is an increased effort by public officials and law enforcement to take that understanding and improve the situation in the field, not just for journalists. You know, journalists, at the end of the day, the story is not about them, but so that journalists can be the eyes and ears of the public, and so that we can understand you know, the protections that are needed not only for them, but also potentially for people who are peacefully protesting.
Sharing his final thoughts, he emphasized the importance of involving the public in recognizing quality journalism, united by the belief that a free press is crucial to a free society.
It's not just a right of the press in terms of free press, but there's also a responsibility. Without the eyes and ears of the press, we don't really know what's happening. You know, at the end of the day, most of us are bearing witness indirectly. We do it sitting on our couch or waiting, for the supermarket checkout line to move. We're flipping through our phones. We're sitting back and watching TV, and we're learning thanks to these journalists. And if we don't know what really happened because of them, it becomes a very scary situation that the public can't make informed choices from what other laws should be passed to how we, you know, budget for certain operations to who we elect. And so, you know, I hope that the folks listening out there, you know, take a moment to thank a journalist in their life. I mean, the reason you're hearing the story, that you're hearing my voice right now, is because of journalists.
The ongoing controversy at Cal Poly Humboldt isn't limited to the police-press interactions. The ACLU of Northern California also issued a memo late last week, calling Cal Poly Humboldt's restrictive media access policy, quote, constitutionally suspect.
That is not acceptable in California.
That was Chessie Thatcher, a senior staff attorney at the ACLU of Northern California.
In general, the government can close public spaces for certain reasons, like a crime scene, but the rule of thumb under the Constitution, if you will, is that those places cannot be closed off or restricted in a way that is either content-based or viewpoint-based. But if it is restricted, then the restriction should be for no more time or no more space than is reasonably necessary. So as an example, if you have a crime scene, and we all can agree, I think, that it would be important for law enforcement to gather evidence of whatever crime allegedly took place that's undisturbed by people going in and out of the crime scene. And there are other reasons why an area may not be safe for the people at a certain time. But you couldn't have that restriction be in place for a month. You know, we wouldn't tolerate that as the public. And so it's a very factually dependent inquiry that's looking at why did the government close this space, for what purpose, and is that purpose being served in a narrow way, and is this restriction reasonable to serve that purpose? So it's, again, it's fact dependent, and that might sound legalese, but there are limits to how much can be closed off for how long.
Multiple journalists we spoke with have expressed interest in filing a lawsuit against law enforcement and Cal Poly Humboldt. So we asked if the ACLU is planning on getting involved.
Well, we are looking into what happens at Cal Poly. We're also coordinating. There are many legal organizations on the ground trying to understand what happened and give support to different groups that were involved. The Palestine Legal and the National Lawyers Guild, among those two groups, are doing a lot of really good work. We at the ACLU are taking intakes. If people have had some treatments they feel violates their First Amendment rights, we encourage them to reach out to us, and hopefully we can help or get you into touch with someone who can also help you. And then looking at general procedural and due process issues that we see, this is where the ACLU, I think, can be especially valuable. If we get a number of intakes that speak to someone's fairness in the process, then we are equipped to address that fairness with the administration or with whoever may be involved in that situation.
KMI News will continue to share updates on the possible rights violations that took place at Cal Poly Humboldt. In addition, the university's Senate held their regular meeting today at an off-campus location, the Arcata Community Center. Here is a brief clip from today's meeting.
My name is Alma Dean. I'm a Cal Poly Humboldt student. I'm studying to be an elementary education teacher, and I was one of the students who was arrested early Tuesday morning. I have been putting money, time, and effort into this education, into this university that does not care about my safety or this ongoing genocide. And I'm concerned that these charges that I am facing will affect my dream of being a teacher, the dream I've had since I was 5. I've spent the last 7 months watching children in Gaza have their neighborhoods destroyed, their families ripped from them, and their lives taken by the hands of the IDF. Children who we have seen brutalized are the same children that I caretake for my job. How can I not imagine my students feeling their pain? These children who we watch take their last breaths may be the same age as your children. How can you, people on this panel, VP Holliday, Dean Mitchell, and AVP White, not imagine the children in your life experiencing that pain? I speak out because I can't watch Palestinians murdered without doing something about it, because I refuse to be complicit in this, because members of my family were killed in the Armenian genocide, and I owe it to them. I'm facing criminal charges and unknown academic repercussions. This is not a democracy that we are living in. This is not a just world. The ACLU wrote a letter to Tom Jackson defending our right to protest, saying, quote, students, faculty, and members of the public are not an evil to be guarded against or silenced. Keeping them away from campus while the academic year is still underway is disruptive and punitive to the entire school community. Excluding these individuals from campus also contravenes the university's stated commitment to, quote, affording all members of the university community the protections of freedom of speech, expression, assembly, religion, and press available under the U.S. and California constitutions. I ask that you on the panel today and Holliday, Mitchell, and White are not on the wrong side of history in this. I ask that you open your eyes to the injustices that are happening in Gaza and realize the fight against student voices is not a fight worth committing yourselves to. I ask that you drop all charges against students, faculty, and community members for exercising our right to protest genocide on a public college campus.
As of news time, that meeting is still unfolding. KMI News will bring you the highlights on tomorrow night's newscast. Cal Poly Humboldt's Public Information Office issued a press release today outlining the, quote, key points for the campus community about the events of April 22nd, end quote. The document listed 19 bullet points. In summary, it stated that vandalism across campus impacted 12 buildings and has resulted in over $1.9 million in estimated damages. You can read the full press release on the KMUD News Facebook page. In memory of an Alder Point resident, Trevor Early, the community gathered at an annual fundraiser supporting local youth sports over the weekend. KMUD's Stella Gerkins reports.
Despite the weather, over 100 people gathered at the second annual Trevor Early Memorial Foundation fundraiser in Alder Point on Saturday, May 4th. The fundraiser featured a barbecue dinner, cornhole tournament, and Dutch raffle, including prizes such as home-baked goods, custom cornhole boards, and gift certificates donated by Humboldt businesses. KEMA News spoke with Sierra Early, Foundation President and Trevor Early's sister, who said that 64 people participated in the cornhole tournament alone. Here's Sierra with more.
So today we have like a barbecue going on, a cornhole tournament, lots of raffle items, bake sale items, and all the money's going for youth sports locally in Humboldt and the surrounding areas.
Trevor Early was murdered on January 6, 2022 by Jake Henry Combs, who admitted to killing Mr. Early after a confrontation over Combs' dog and was subsequently sentenced to 50 years to life in prison. Sierra Early, along with her family and close friends, started the foundation in Trevor's honor, which supports youth athletics in Humboldt County and surrounding areas.
So we founded the foundation. We got like nonprofit status and everything this year. We were doing some kind of fundraisers probably in the last 2 years, but this year we got everything finalized and have like the set bank account for everything. And the thing behind it was that my brother was really involved in athletics and sports. We both were growing up, and out here we don't always get a lot of funding and things. So we wanted kids, like, if they want to play, that money shouldn't be an object, whether that's paying, you know, like $150 registration fee or equipment or whatever that is.
Last year's fundraiser went towards reinstating the Southern Humboldt Youth Football League, and some of the money raised this year will go towards another football program that Trevor himself was a part of.
This year, I know that the Ferndale football team was trying to go to a lineman camp, which my brother went to when he went to school there, so we're going to do a big donation to them. I believe South Fork softball girls still need some sports equipment, so we're going to go there. And the South Fork FFA ag kind of programs. And then we're just keeping our ears out for any other programs in need.
Early thanked the numerous community members who volunteered, donated, supported, and helped plan this fundraiser, including Second District Supervisor Michelle Bushnell. Here's Bushnell.
So I think that for one thing, it's a statement. You know, Trevor was murdered. His life was taken for not one reason. There's absolutely no reason that he was murdered. And so the statement is that, you know, they're not tolerating this, and that his memory is going to live on. And so the people of Humboldt County are coming to support his family and to really recognize that Trevor matters and that he's not going to be forgotten and that his memory is going to live on and that his family and his friends are going to make sure of that and to support his family. And they're showing that today. There's over 100 people here and people helping and just here to support Trevor and his family and to remember him.
For those who couldn't make it to the fundraiser but still want to support, Early asked that you follow the Trevor Early Memorial Foundation Facebook page to stay up to date on future events and fundraisers. You can also message them on Facebook there or email te.memorialfoundation@gmail.com. Early says that a softball tournament fundraiser is in the works for later this year.
I just wanted to say that my brother was a really great person. He was always trying to help other people. And so I'm just really happy that his memory can live on and to see everyone come together. That's what he was always about. And he would just look down and be so happy at all of us getting together today.
For KMUN News, I'm Stella Gerkins.
In state news, hundreds of thousands of California children dropped off Medi-Cal since last year. Suzanne Potter reports.
Medi-Cal has dropped several hundred thousand low-income children from the health insurance rolls since April 2023, according to a new report from Georgetown University. The data show a net drop in children's Medi-Cal enrollment of 200,000 kids between April and December of last year as the state started redetermining participants' annual eligibility, which had been paused to ensure continuous coverage during the pandemic. Myra Alvarez with the Children's Partnership says another 100,000 have been dropped this year.
Some 80% of the people that lose coverage in California are losing it for procedural reasons, not because they're not eligible, but because their paperwork didn't make it to the county, or they waited too long on the line and got frustrated and had to hang up, or they moved and the letter never even reached them.
The state of California has made a massive outreach effort to keep those who are eligible covered. More than 500,000 children, half of California's kids, depend on Medi-Cal. And 3/4 of them are children of color. It's unclear how many kids who lost Medi-Cal were later enrolled in private coverage. Joan Alker is a co-author of the report with the Center for Children and Families at Georgetown University. She says gaps in coverage can lead to long-term negative impacts.
Kids are going to miss out on those well child visits. They're going to miss out on getting the medications they need, be it an inhaler for their asthma or an ADHD medication. And that really sets them back, both in their health and their success in school.
A few years ago, California lawmakers passed a requirement for continuous coverage in Medi-Cal for children ages 0 to 5. Alvarez is urging them to follow through and allocate $10 million in the next state budget to fulfill this mission. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
May 3rd was World Press Freedom Day. Even as the war in Gaza stands out as one of the deadliest conflicts for journalists, KPFA's Eileen Alfandari reports.
The media office in Gaza puts the number of journalists killed since the start of the war at more than 140. Many of them appear to be deliberately targeted by Israel. At least 4 Israeli journalists and 3 Lebanese journalists have also died since the war began, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. At an awards ceremony in Chile, UNESCO official Tawfiq Jalassi awarded the annual World Press Freedom Prize to all Palestinian journalists in Gaza.
The ongoing conflict in Gaza has posed extreme risks and challenges to journalists undertaking their vital work to provide life-saving information to the population and to inform the world about the situation on the ground. Never in a recent conflict has the profession had to pay such a heavy price in a very short period of time.
At a separate event upholding press freedom, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres pinned the blame for the journalist's death squarely on Israel.
I'm shocked and appalled by the high number of journalists killed in Israeli military operations in Gaza. The United Nations recognizes the invaluable work of journalists and media professionals to ensure that the public is informed and engaged. Without facts, we cannot fight mis and disinformation. Without accountability, we will not have strong policies in place. Without press freedom, we won't have any freedom.
Nasser Abu Bakr, the president of the Palestinian Journalists Union, was on hand to accept the award for Gaza journalists. He said he would speak in Arabic, the language of his colleagues in Gaza, for whom he was accepting the prize.
As-salamu ala Gaza, li'annaha tastahiqu as-salam.
Abu Bakr said, "Peace to Gaza because it deserves it. Peace to Gaza and the journalists of Gaza and all of Palestine who deserve love and hope." He added that his joy on accepting the prize was mixed with sadness for the loss of the martyrs of the Palestinian press. Abu Bakr said it is also mixed with determination and willingness to hold accountable and prosecute the criminals who killed them. The Press Freedom Conference also paid homage to environmental journalists in nations where covering issues of deforestation, environmental exploitation, and contamination can be deadly. Audrey Azoulay is UNESCO's Director General.
Far too many of them are facing threats that intend to silence them. We are releasing a report today that shows that 44 green journalists have been killed over the last 15 years. Attacks against journalists covering environmental stories are higher than ever before.
UNESCO says the climate and biodiversity crises are not only affecting the environment and ecosystems, but also the lives of billions of people around the world. It says that exposing the crisis is the first step to solving it, and that's why the role of journalists is crucial. I'm Eileen Alvendary for KPFA News.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Stella Gerkins, Suzanne Potter, and Eileen Alvendary. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.